Welcome to episode 39 of Talking Prisoner. Another huge guest with us today. Our guest appeared in 35 episodes of Prisoner and was in one of the major cliffhangers of all times. Our guest has also appeared in other Australian classic TV shows and movies such as Seven Little Australians, The Evil Touch, The Outsiders, The Sullivans, The Young Doctors, Chopper Squad, Case for the Defence, Skyways, Kathy's Child, The Journalists, The Restless Years, Cop Shop, Sporting Chance, Bellamy, Sons and Daughters, Rafferty's Rules, The Harp in the South, Fields of Fire, Poor Man's Orange, Fragments of War, The Story of Damien Pereira, E Street, The Flying Doctors, Big Ideas, A Country Practice, GP, Janus, Police Rescue, Heartbreak High, Children's Hospital, Fireflies, All Saints and Blood Brothers. She's also very well known for her role as a headmistress as Judith Aykroyd in Home and Away from 1999 to 2000. And there is more. She's also got stage credits, which include Something for Every Man, Sisters, There and Back, Speed the Plow, and Mum's the Word. We're, of course, talking about Anna Ruby. Welcome to Talking Prisoner, and good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Thank you.
I have to catch my breath now. Is there a show that you haven't been on?
Well, just listening to that, it's like, oh my goodness, how did I do all that?
where'd you find the time? I mean, you've been on every TV show in Australia.
I'm pretty old, so.
Now, thanks for joining us. I know all the fans are going to want to hear about Prisoner and Patty Lawson, who, of course, you play, but we will get to that soon. We'd like to learn about your life growing up as a child, if that's okay.
Yeah, well, I grew up in a suburb of Sydney called La Perouse, and I had I'm the middle child of an older sister, younger brother, a mum and a dad, and everybody was involved in the entertainment industry in one way or another. My mum was the worst housekeeper in the world, but the best mother. Like, she just played with us all day, and I really feel very grateful for my childhood. I had a wonderful time and very, very close family, still very close to my siblings. My mum passed a few years ago, of course, but and my dad many years before that, but we're still very, very close siblings. And I was very lucky to have such a fabulous family. Cousins, aunties, uncles, all marvelous.
When you say a bad housekeeper, what do you mean by that?
I mean, well, you know, my husband is an OCD housekeeper. Like, he does all the cleaning, because I never learned how to do it, because my mother barely knew how to wash a dish. She was quite a good cook, but she wasn't good at washing up after the cooking, and she was just always doing much more interesting things, like housework just didn't interest her. So I don't know if I married my husband out of I don't know if that was one of the appealing things, because I quite like the idea of living in a clean house, but I had no idea how to do it. So now, you know, I've been married for a very long time. In fact, I met my husband just in Sydney about 3 weeks before I had to fly to Sydney, to Melbourne, to start filming Prisoner.
Oh, really?
And it was a good test. But I always joke that one of the reasons that the marriage has lasted so well is that he does do all the housework. So, I mean, you know, I don't think I'm going to find another one like that. So I'm hanging on to him, because I don't know how to do it.
Now, just before we do start, on your husband, now you're married to a very famous country and Western singer. Can you tell us about him?
Yeah. Well, he's probably not very famous, although he is award-winning. He's won several Golden Guitar Awards and Mo Awards over here with his, he had a band in the country music field. In the 90s called The Wheel, and they were a very popular band here, so that they did very well. And he's only recently, though, it's funny, because he's literally just turned 70, and he never intended to make another album. His last album he made about a decade ago, but then COVID happened, and we were just at home with nothing to do, and a wonderful friend of his said, oh, look, he's got this friend, Rod McCormack, is a wonderful musician and used to be in The Wheel with him, beautiful guitar player and a wonderful producer, had this gorgeous studio. And he said to Kim, look, if you've got nothing to do, have you got any old songs that you wanted to record just for fun? And Kim said, oh, yeah, he had these few old songs, and he went down and recorded them, and they sounded so fantastic. That was so great. that Rod said, have you got any more? And so he went down and did a few more, and he said, you know, two more and we'll have an album. So so he ended up recording all these songs, and he really, I mean, it always sounds so unconvincing coming from his wife, but he's a really great songwriter and a beautiful singer. And this album, all his musician friends and all his fans are saying, oh my goodness, like your voice is sounding better than ever. And I think you heard a bit of a clip. Did you hear it?
I actually watched some this morning on YouTube, and
amazing. And so, you know, he is a really great singer, isn't he? And kind of like he's 70, which is just bizarre that he's so cool, because everybody thinks he's just this really cool guy. So I'm married to this really cool old septuagenarian, you know. Yeah, so, and he's just been nominated for an award. This album was nominated excuse me, this album was nominated for an award at the Golden Guitars. We're off to Tamworth in a week or so, so fingers crossed he'll win an award. So we'll see.
And just for the overseas fans, the Tamworth Musical Festival is a big
it's the major country music festival in Australia. So it's so a Golden Guitar is a big deal over here in the in the rural areas and the country music scene in Australia. His album, interestingly, he's got such an eclectic sort of array of songs, but he's actually been nominated in the bluegrass category, which he feels a little embarrassed about, because he's got so many friends who are wonderful bluegrass musicians and songwriters, and he feels a little bit like he's, you know, I'm not really bluegrass. And so I think if he wins, he's going to apologize to all the other nominees, but we'll see. You never know with these things. So but he's more sort of, I don't know, sort of roots music, I suppose people describe it as roots or blues, a little bit countryish, you know, kind of cool country rather than Slim Dusty or whatever.
And just before Ken asks his question, just one more thing, that song that you sent me the link to about the war, that was brilliant. What inspired that?
Well, that was around the time, really, it was the film clip is very disturbing, I suppose, in a lot of ways, like a lot of disturbing war imagery, because it is an anti-war song. And it was in 2013, I think, around the time that Syria was being invaded by America and us, and it was, I mean, really, my husband's very cynical about all politicians on all sides of politics, and so it was just a bit of a song about, can't we do it better? You know, like, do we have to keep fighting? And of course, we are once again in a nasty old war now. So it seems like things don't change as much as we like them to.
Yeah,
That's right. Tell us about your school days. Favorite subject? Worst subject?
Yeah, well, I was pretty good at school. When I was younger, I was quite a keen student, and English was always my favourite subject, because I liked reading, I liked writing, I liked drama. So English was always my strongest subject. Maths was always my poorest subject. My husband and I are both terrible at maths, and our daughter is really good at it. I think it skipped a generation. My dad was pretty good at maths, and so we were always baffled by how good she was at maths, still is. So, I did lose interest a bit in school as time went on, as I was getting more acting work. And I'd started acting so young. I started, you know, my first job, I was only just turned 9 years old in 1969. No, like late 1968 was when I did started my first job. And no, it wasn't. It must have been 16. Was it 68? Around 68, 69. I can't quite remember, but I was very young. And I did, you know, acting work all through my teens, bits and pieces. And so by the time I was 17, I knew I was going to be an actress. I already had a good CV, you know. So So that was my aim and my goal, and that's just what I was going to do. So I think there was a question I read there about mentioning that I did actually end up getting expelled from school. And I was such a good girl. Like, I was actually I was not a rebel at all, but I did get expelled from school. And that was because I was working on the Young Doctors at the time, and it was taking up quite a bit of my time. And so I was missing quite a lot of school. I'd be at school for 2 days out of five in a week. And the headmaster got me in the office and said, well, you know, it's your HSC year. You can't be doing this. You'll have to stop all that and concentrate on your schoolwork. And I said, well, actually, I'm going to be an actress, and this is what I'm doing. And so, no, I won't do that. Like, that would be a foolish decision for me. And he said, well, you'll have to make a choice. And I said, well, I actually did swear at him, but I won't do that. and so he literally handed me a pile of papers and said, well, please go around to all your teachers, get them to sign these forms, bring them back to the office and leave the premises. Wow. And that was it. So yeah, that was a bit dramatic. And then I was out on my own, 17, out there starting my proper grown-up life.
So back in those days, I mean, I know now they have, you know, teachers and things on sets for kids that are on TV shows, but did they have that back in those days, or it was just you missed?
Well, they did. They did. Like, when I was a kid and working on, for instance, Seven Little Australians, where I was only 12 years old, we had a tutor and we were doing correspondence schooling because that was a four-month sort of thing. But Young Doctors, and we were also Seven Little Australians, we were away on location quite a bit. But with Young Doctors, it was filmed in Sydney. I lived in Sydney, and I could get to school several days a week. And I mean, I as I said to the headmaster on that fateful day, I was quite confident that I could do my schoolwork and pass my HSC. And he just didn't think that that was appropriate, that my attendance record wouldn't be good enough. I just lost my train of thought there. Sorry about that. what was the question? Where did that question start again?
I was talking about if they had, you know.
Oh, tutors. That's right, tutors. Yes. So, Young Doctors, I didn't have a tutor. I was 16 years old by then, 16, 17. I must have been 17 because I was 17 when I left school. So I must have been I started work on the Young Doctors when I was 16, but I was 17 by the time I left. So at that age, and because I could get to school a couple of days a week, they didn't think they needed to have an on-set tutor.
Wow. Now, I did mention to Ken a few weeks ago, we're in episode 39, and the question about school, we asked favourite subjects and least favourite subjects, and out of the 39 people we've had on so far, have all said English is their favourite, maths is the least favourite. But I do stand corrected because a fan did pull me up and said Lois Collander said that maths was her favourite. So,
there's one. Okay. Well, that must be an actory kind of thing then, do you think? Like, as most actors lean towards the English and with the maths, yeah.
Now, you came from a big showbiz family. Can you tell us about your parents, in particular your mum?
Yes. Well, my mother is Australian. My dad was Czech. He came over here after the war, and my mother was she really was truly quite an incredible woman. She was an actress herself for many years. Worked with J.C. Williamson's and lots of the big theatre companies back when she was young in the late 40s, 50s, 60s, and then I started acting, as I said, in around 1968, 69, or professionally acting at least. And in 1972, I think it was, she decided to open a theatrical agency. And she was actually the first agent to represent Aboriginal actors in Australia.
Oh, wow.
Because in La Perouse, where we lived, there's a big Aboriginal community there, has lived there for thousands of years. And so she was very involved with the Aboriginal community. And was an agent who went above and beyond for her artists. Like, she loved her artists. And when she, with shows like, I don't know if you remember the ABC series Rush, and a lot of the ABC series around that time in the 70s were starting to feature Aboriginal storylines or storylines that involved the Aboriginal community. And so they'd always go to my mother, and my mother would cast all these, you know, kids and adults and different people. But she would get up in the morning. We lived in La Perouse, which was in the southernmost tip of the eastern suburbs of Sydney. And most of these shows were filmed in Gore Hill, which was on the north shore of Sydney over the Harbour Bridge. And my mother would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, go to these people's houses, these little Koori kids' houses, and pick them up, bring them back to her place, give them breakfast, get them in the car and drive them to work. Like she would, I don't know of many agents who actually went that far for their people. And when I got to 15 years old and my mother said, I think you need a different agent. You shouldn't be represented by your mother. For me, I always say this when people say, what quality do you want in it from your agent? Like, what is it you want from your agent? And I always say, and people laugh, but I actually mean it, I say, I want them to love me. I want them to absolutely love me, because if they love me, then when they're talking about me and trying to sell me to somebody else, they love me. You know, they're going to say good things because that's how my mother operated. And I have had agents who have loved me. Probably my agent now loves me. So that's the quality that I like in an agent. So she was remarkable with that. She also started at the very ground level on community television here, cable television. She started that again, very involved in the with the Aboriginal community, because it was first filmed from the basement of these housing commission flats in Redfern, which is a very Aboriginal community, you know, area of Sydney as well. And she did that up until a couple of years before she died, when everything, the cable community television got shut down. And she was,
that was called Joy's World, yeah.
Joy's World, that's right. And yes, it was quite the magical place. But she was very instrumental in many actors, many Australian actors' careers. You know, people like, you know, Simon Burke, who I went to school with, was his first agent. And Gia Carides, and, you know, many people. Rick Herbert was on her books, and like many people. So of course she got an Order of Australia medal for her community work, because she's very, very active, you know, really gave everything away to anybody. She was an exceptional woman. Even my husband, I love hearing my husband talk about her, because he just adored her. And it's so great to have a husband who loved his mother-in-law.
Yeah. You know?
That's kind of a nice thing, yeah.
What was it like getting a new agent after having your mum as an agent? Was it hard? Was it tough? Because she was so good at what she did.
Well, no, I was very fortunate with my first agent. The first agent I went to when I was 15 was International Casting Service agent, when Gloria Payton was still the matriarch there, and she loved her artists. So she was the right agent for me. And I was with ICS for many, many years. And then I switched around over the years. Gloria died while I was still with ICS. And I had a series of different people, some who were, well, all who were wonderful, really. But and in the end, I only left ICS because the agent who was looking after me at that time, I loved, and she left. And so I went with her. So I kind of feel like I've never really left an agent without being, I've never abandoned an agent, really. I've just moved along with them. I'm the loyal type. I'm pretty, you know, married for going on 40 years now. And yeah, so yeah, I love all my agents. I've loved all my agents, and they've loved me.
Good.
Next question is about what your parents thought about you being an actress, but it's patently obvious that they promoted you.
Yes, they were always They were always very, very supportive. I mean, my dad was, he was a pianist. He was more a musician than anything else. He was a jazz pianist, really lovely jazz pianist. My mum did cast him in the odd commercial every now and again. But really he was a golfer and a really good golfer and a really good piano player. So we were all sort of, we were a creative family. My sister, who's also a wonderful musician, piano player, but she ended up being a film caterer for many years. She was a wonderful cook and so fed many, many people, including me, on many shows that I worked on. And my brother, who is still working in the industry, it was a focus puller, cameraman. He's done that for many, many years. He also did some acting when he was young. He was a regular in a series called Carrots, which had some lovely actors in it, including Shane Porteous and other people. But he's a very, very good cameraman now. He's worked on all the major films pretty much that have been shot in Australia. I think he's just about to start work on something called Nautilus, that's been shot up in the Gold Coast. I don't even know what that is, but I think it's probably some big flashy thing, isn't it? Because he does, you know, he did all the Matrix movies and the Babe movies and Aquaman he worked on recently and, you know, things like, you know, Moulin Rouge.
Hollywood films.
What? Yeah, all the big American films that are made out here he works on. Yeah, so, wow. so we're all a bit creative and impractical.
You just mentioned Shane Porteous, Country Practice, Terrence. I mean, what an amazing actor. Do you know him or?
Yes, and beautiful man, of course. Like lovely. He did a very. I mean, I worked with him, of course, a couple of times on Country Practice, and my mother did a lovely little film with him in Tasmania, and they got very close. He's a lovely man.
Yeah, he is. Wow. Spare time, if you have any. Do you have any hobbies at all?
Yeah, well, now I live on a little 3-acre property in Eureka. I've become a very keen gardener. I've got a beautiful garden. And I also am a really keen cook. I'm a really good cook, and I've become a very good baker. I do a lot of baking, sourdough baking. Oh, and of course, I live across the road from a dairy now.
Oh, wow.
And so I get raw milk from the dairy, and I've become a really good cheese maker. I make, you know, all the cheeses, my, you know, blues and camemberts and brie and ricotta and feta and halloumi. And I love showing off my cheeses. I'm a very good cheese maker. So I'm a dairy maid these days. Yeah. So yeah, cooking and gardening, the classic kind of things. Got into a lot of crocheting at one point, knitting when I joined the CW. I took to country life like a duck to water. I joined the CWA, that's the Country Women's Association for the overseas viewers. So yeah, I've embraced the country life. I've been living up here for nearly 11 years now. For the first 7.5 years, I did commute to Sydney every week. I flew to Sydney for 2 or 3 days work every week, mostly my voiceover work.
Now, the CWS are very famous for their scones. Is that right?
Yes.
Do you get the recipe when you join, or what's?
I don't know. Look, this is a true story. As I said, I'm a really good baker, but scones were always a huge challenge for me. Like I never could do a light scone. And I swear this is a true story. I went into Bangalore to the CWA office, and I paid my membership and I got my card, and I came home and I thought, right, I'm making scones to celebrate. Best scones I ever made. Seriously. Like, wow. And I thought, is it just joining the CWA? I mean, they didn't give me the recipe. I just came home with my membership, made the scones. They were awesome. Go figure.
Well, apparently the rumor is that they don't give the recipe out. Apparently it's a big secret, the recipe.
Well, I used the Women's Weekly Australian Women's Weekly cookbook recipe. I didn't use the CWA recipe. So I don't know. I think it's just paying the membership. I reckon that's it. Yeah.
And just going on the cheese, is it hard to make cheese? Is it a big process?
It's like alchemy. It's like magic. I love it. It's patience. Very good to teach you patience, timing, paying attention. They need some of them need a lot of nurturing and, wow, and like real patience. I just did my longest cheese that I've ever made, which is a really strong, not for the faint-hearted, Gorgonzola. Oh, yeah. And that took months to age, and I had to, you know, get it out and wipe it and scrape it and turn it every couple of weeks, you know, for months. And it's getting like more and more scary looking and smelling like old socks, as blue cheese can, but beautiful. I'm very proud of it.
We come to your place for scones and cheese, I think.
Yeah, that's what people do around here, yeah.
Apart from scones and cheese, do you have a favourite food?
Tomatoes. And if I'm very specific, the tomatoes that I buy here at the farmer's market from Heather, Cooper's Shoot tomatoes, I could live on them. I sometimes just have a tomato for my lunch with a little bit of salt on it. She does all these heritage tomatoes. I think the Bulgarian beefsteak is my favourite. Like I know my tomatoes. I quite like the British beefsteak, but the Bulgarian beefsteak is really, really good. I don't even try growing tomatoes because I do grow a lot of vegetables. So I've got quite a good vegetable garden, but tomatoes, I tried a few times and they're just not up to scratch. I Cooper's Shoot tomatoes, Heather, big plug for her. Awesome.
Wow. Sounds amazing. Sorry, Ken.
What's that old saying about wisdom is knowing that tomatoes aren't a fruit.
Oh, I thought they are a fruit.
Well, there's a debate about that.
They are a fruit, and wisdom is knowing that you don't put them into a fruit salad.
Yeah, exactly. And knowing that tomatoes are a fruit. So what was the first bit?
Tomatoes aren't a fruit.
Are
a fruit. And
wisdom is knowing wisdom. Not to put them in a fruit salad.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah.
There's always a big debate about a tomato being a fruit or a vegetable everywhere you go.
Yeah, it's kind of, it covers everything. That's why I love it so much. It's like it can be all things to all people.
You're a fan of the tomato, Ken?
Sorry?
You're a fan of the tomato?
I am a big fan of the tomato. I think they're a South American.
Don't know my tomato history. But,
I think they come from South America.
Probably.
But they're wonderful.
Yeah,
I love them.
They are. Now, getting off tomatoes, we're veered off. Do you have a favourite TV show that you like to watch?
Oh, well, I like to be perfectly honest, I haven't watched actual television for well over a decade now. Like many other people these days, I suppose I do a lot of streaming. There's a lot of things that I've loved. What I'm watching at the moment is a show that I never saw when it came out, and I'm absolutely loving it. Is the Jennifer Garner series Alias. I'm loving that.
Okay.
I love it, yeah. So that's my current favourite. But I don't know, there's been lots of good television over the years. And I loved the American show The Wire. I thought that was some of my favourite television. 6 Feet Under was one of my favourite series. I loved on SBS, I used to love that show called not Front Up. Do you remember that show Front Up, where it was the interviewer whose name has just passed me by, Andrew L. Urban, and he just wandered around the streets talking to people.
Oh, really?
And he was the best interviewer, and it was just this show that made you realize that every single person on the whole planet has a really interesting story to tell. Like, everybody's interesting if you just know how to kind of be with them, you know, sit with them and be with them and listen to them. Everybody's got a great story. I loved that show. I think Margaret Pomerantz produced it.
Oh, wow.
And it was a really, really, really special television. So yeah, but I there's lots of different things that I like.
Yeah.
You've appeared in some of Australia's most popular TV shows. You were in Seven Little Australians, playing Nell Walcott in 1973, you worked with Len Teal, Ruth Cracknell, and Judy McBurney. How did you get that role, and what was it like being a part of that show? And do you have any memories of those three?
That show was one of the most wonderful productions I have worked on in my whole career. It was really, really special. Ron Way directed that and he cast me in it. He also cast me in my very first ever television show, which was called, it was a Channel 9 Christmas special called Hans Christian Andersen, that was a whole lot of Hans Christian Andersen stories and had all these lovely British, all these, it was a BBC, or no, ITV Australian co-production, I think. And it had people like Patrick Weimark and Richard Deacon and these old sort of music hall almost British actors who came over here. And so Ron had cast me when I was 8 or 9 years old in my very first television role. And then when I was 12 years old, they were casting for Seven Little Australian. And he cast me as Nell. And he was the most beautiful man. He only died a couple of years ago. And in fact, I hadn't seen him for many, many years, like 20, 30 years. I don't know how long since I'd seen him. And he contacted me out of the blue only less than a year before he died to tell me that he was living up in this region. Oh. And he'd like to see me. And I went out to lunch with him and his wife. And he's so beautiful. And he was just reaching out to people in his life. He knew he was dying. And I felt so privileged that he had reached out to me. That show was absolutely divine. Leonard Teal was wonderful. He was great with the kids. He was not like friendly and fun and with the kids. He was very much like he sort of stayed in character with us, which was the strict father. Ruth Cracknell, even though she was so much younger at the time, was terrifying. She scared the crap out of all of us. Judy McBurney was absolutely fun. I loved Judy. Judy was also very close to my mother. She was a lovely girl because I worked with her on The Young Doctors as well, of course.
Yeah.
And she was beautiful person. Loved her very much. But that show, there was a man who worked on that show who's also passed away now, the sound recordist, whose name was Sid Butterworth. And many years later, I was 12 years old when I did that show, and it was truly, truly a special production. Everybody, every crew member, every cast member loved working on that show. And it was a beautiful piece of television and stands up still very well today. And many years later, I got cast in a series called, a mini series called Harp in the South. And Sid Butterworth was the sound recordist on that show as well. And that production, that one and the sequel, Poor Man's Orange, were also special shows to work on. Really beautiful television, beautiful cast. Annie Phelan played my mother. Won many awards for that role, the role she played as our mother. She was just so divine to work with. I loved her like a mother. Brilliant woman, brilliant. But Sid Butterworth was the sound recordist. And halfway through the shooting of that, I remember sitting down with him one day and him saying to me, "Can you believe we got to work on another show as wonderful as Seven Little Australians, that we could work on two shows that were this special?" And so that's how special they were. Sid had worked on a million things between the two, and it was 12 to 25 for me. They were busy years for me. So that Seven Little Australians was truly special television, and does stand up as well. It was 1970s, and it does stand up as a really wonderful piece of drama. Filmed drama still today, as do Harp in the South and Poor Man's Orange, which very recently rewatched. But I'll get into that later because I got some good stories about that. Okay. Rewatching that,
amazing. Yeah. Now speaking of the 70s, a show that Ken's also worked on. You played Hilda in The Sullivans. What was it like being in The Sullivans? How'd you get that part?
Well, that one. Do you know, like, I cannot even remember whether I auditioned for that part and got the role or whether I was just given the role. Because a lot of those roles, some of these roles, I was just, like, I didn't have to audition for them for some reason. But I can't remember auditioning for that role. But it was I was only in it for 6 or 7 weeks, and I just turned 16 before I went to do that, and so they timed it over the Christmas holidays. So I pretty much spent my Christmas holidays that year filming The Sullivans. And to be honest, the thing I remember about it most was that it was shot in Melbourne and I lived in Sydney. And so they flew me down there at 16 years old and gave me my own apartment in Toorak, this beautiful apartment.
Toorak.
A handful of money every week, all these per diems, a handful of cab charge dockets. And I was just 16 years old in a city working on a pretty cool show with money to spend and on my own. I remember being picked up from the airport, driven to my apartment, given a call sheet and a cab charge docket and saying, see you on Monday. Just call it, you know, the cab will be there or whatever, and just give them the docket. And going into this uber cool, really lovely apartment and putting the radio on. And I still remember it was Leo Sayer singing You Make Me Feel Like Dancing, and just dancing around that apartment thinking, oh my God, how cool is this? So that's actually, I have to admit, that is my strongest memory of The Sullivans. I very much remember Michael Caton, who although I was very young and I didn't have a lot to do with him on that show, has since become a very good friend of mine. We are good friends.
Oh wow.
And of course Desmond Mangan, who I don't know if you know Desmond, he was the other little English evacuee. It was Hilda and I can't remember his character's name, but the two of us came in at the same time. And he's a very interesting Australian actor, producer, writer, comedian. And we did a lot of hanging out together and chatting. I remember being quite besotted with Andrew McFarlane, who is also, of course, not for me, of course, but is a beautiful man. And we were actually just before COVID, the year before COVID, I did a wonderful trip in Turkey with my husband, and we're Facebook friends, Andrew and I, and he was in Turkey as well. And I was following him around Turkey and I kept writing to him and saying, so where's the best restaurant in Istanbul? And he's saying, oh, you've got to go here and you've got to go there. And that was really fun. Wow. Yeah. And so that was that yeah. So the Sullivans was lovely, but it was, for me, it was like, wow. In fact, I tell you, do you know Max Phipps? Do you know who Max Phipps is? He was a wonderful Australian actor, died far too young, played Gough Whitlam in the series here, the Dismissal, the miniseries The Dismissal. Max Phipps played Gough Whitlam, but he also played Frankenfurter in the Rocky Horror Show in Melbourne for ages. And he was the only person I knew in Melbourne when I went down to do The Sullivans. And I would go and see the Rocky Horror Picture, the Rocky Horror Show every night. Wow. Every single night. I could quote the Rocky Horror Show, the whole script, every lyric of every song. I just knew that show inside out and backwards. And I just adored Max. He was like, he was my mentor, my friend, he was quite a wonderful man. So I was very lucky, lucky to have him there as well. So really, to be perfectly honest, my strongest memories of working on The Sullivans were being in Melbourne as a 16-year-old on my own.
Yes.
With my friends BJ and Fabian, hanging out with them. The three of us were just Max lovers, and we'd just go to the show together every night. And they're actually, I confess, my strongest memories.
And just for the overseas fans, Toorak is like one of the most prestige, yes, suburbs of Melbourne. Did they put you up in Toorak as well, Ken? Or?
No, Fitzroy was more. Fitzroy Tally Theatre. Did the Rocky Horror Show, was that coming out of the Fitzroy Tally Theatre at that stage?
I'm trying to remember. No, I don't think it was. It was, it, but it could have been. Oh gosh, when my friend Fabian, if he ever watches this, which he well may do, he'll be appalled that I've forgotten the name of the theatre, and we'll write it in the comments afterwards if you have that somewhere. So I should Google it while I'm here, shouldn't I? Anyway, what's the next question while I Google that?
Yeah, no, I cut my teeth on television working out of the Fitzroy Tally Theatre back in the 1960s. That's why I asked you.
Was it a really old, dusty old
yes,
theatre?
Yes, yes.
It probably was then, yeah.
You played, is it still there, Ken, the theatre?
No, it's no longer.
Shame.
It's office blocks or apartments or something now. It's long gone. But I was there for the opening of the Fitzroy Tele Theatre, which was Norm Spencer's baby. And then
yes, the Regent like, Fitzroy, that's it.
Yeah, then yep. Things like Sunnyside Up, I worked on that. Homicide, when it was out there, before it went back to Channel 7. Video Village, Consider Your Verdict.
Wow.
Yeah.
All through that era. So let's get more up to date. And you played Sandy Pierce in The Young Doctors from 1977 to 1978. How did you get the part? And can you tell the fans a bit about that character?
Okay, so now we are going back a while here. Yes, that character, Sandy, was the girlfriend and later on the wife of Helen Gordon, the secretary's son, who was the manager of a rock and roll band. And I believe, as I recall, that Mark Hembro was the singer of the rock and roll band. As I recall, I don't remember very specifics about the character, except that she wasn't very approved of, I believe, by his mother. Do you remember the Rick Herbert's character's name in that? I don't remember.
Is it Roger Gordon?
Roger.
Yes.
Roger Gordon, that's right, Roger. So Helen was his mum, Roger was the son. And Helen didn't like Sandy very much and didn't really think she was the right girlfriend for him. And then he had an accident. He slips by the pool. Roger has an accident, slipping by the pool, became a paraplegic, and Sandy married him and so redeemed herself as being, she really is a loyal, you know, she's the right girl for this fellow. I believe that's how the storyline went. And, of course, I knew Rick Herbert before that. He was represented by my mother and was a very talented musical theatre guy. I'd seen him in Ned Kelly and been very impressed by him, and then yes, met him, got to work with him on The Young Doctors, which was lovely. And my brother was actually doing, he was very young, it wasn't when I was in there because I was only 16, my brother was younger than that, but it was a year later that my brother was working standby props on The Young Doctors, and then before he moved into the camera department.
Wow, amazing. Now, my next question was about Rick, but we've just spoken about Rick and we will talk about him in the prisoner thing.
Context.
But now, I just want to ask, are you an actor that likes to audition or doesn't like auditions?
I don't know that any actors like auditions. Do they? Have some actors said they like auditions?
I've heard some say.
I guess I don't. I mean, it's always nerve-wracking auditioning. I mean, I think I've sort of had the advantage. I felt like I had an advantage over many of my contemporaries especially when I was in my late teens, early 20s, late 20s, because I started so young, because I started acting so young. By the time I was 16, I had done a lot of work.
Yeah.
But I had also been for a lot of auditions that I hadn't gotten. So I was accustomed to rejection, which is something that actors really need to become accustomed to. Like you have to get very good at being told, no, we don't want you. We want somebody else. And and sometimes that's very difficult. And other times it's easier. For me, I think I learned very young that it was just part of, that you had to get good at being told no and not to take it personally, to just, even if you thought that the person who got the job, that you would have been better than them, even if you believe that, there's no sort of room for resentment, because like I always say about acting and people, what people think about actors and different performances is that you're only ever as good as somebody thinks you are. You know, like somebody either enjoys your performance or they don't. You know, I think Robert De Niro is a really great actor, but I know people who really don't like him. Does that mean he's a bad actor or a good actor or neither? It's so much a matter of opinion, you know, and as an actor, you always have to, you have to build up some sort of resilience about against people's opinions, you know?
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, so auditions, no, I don't like auditioning. But I've been for I've had some fun auditions. Actually, do you want one anecdote about a really funny audition?
Yeah.
I have to tell a little story first. Oh, no, I'll tell you about the audition first. So I went for this audition and it was with, the director was PJ Hogan, quite a well-known director. And it was a role I didn't get, but the audition was fun. So I went, PJ Hogan was the director and I was the actor reading with me. They had an actor reading with me and it was a wonderful actor called Colin Moody. And anyway, in this was a bit of a dodgy audition, a bit of a funny audition, I suppose. But anyway, I honestly don't even remember what it was for. But it was in a Bondi apartment. It was in his apartment. So there's Colin Moody, there's PJ Hogan, and we're doing these lines and doing whatever. And then he said, "Oh, let's do a bit of an impro." And the impro was he wanted us to be playing Twister, naked and covered in oil. We weren't naked, like we did it in our clothes. But he said, "Just imagine that you're naked and covered in oil, and you're playing Twister." And I was like, "Yeah, okay, you know." So we did that and whatever, the audition was over and that was just an audition. Some years later though, and this is really, honestly, this is such, I find this hilarious. But anyway, some years later, I went to see a play with my friend Denise Kirby, another lovely actress. And Colin Moody was in this play and he was just fantastic. We just thought, oh my God, wasn't he wonderful? We were absolutely besotted. And so afterwards we're having a drink in the bar and we're waiting for the actors to come out, and then out comes Colin, and Denise says, "Oh, we should go and tell him, you know, let's go and say hi and tell him that we thought he was fabulous." And anyway, I was really nervous and very starstruck, and I had absolutely no memory of doing this audition with him. And anyway, we go up to him, and he's a very, very big, tall man, and he's standing at the bar, and he's got his drink, and he's looking down at us like this as we're going, "Oh, Colin, you know, we just want to tell you you're just so fantastic. We just think you're marvelous." And he's nodding away. And then he looks at me and he says, "You know, we've met before, don't you?" And I said, "Really? Have we?" Because I'd just totally forgotten. I'm terrible like that. And he said, "Yeah." He said, "I can't believe you don't remember." And I said, "Really?" And he said, "You don't remember? We played Twister, naked, covered in oil." And my friend, who was just absolutely besotted with him, she was like, "You know," and like my eyes are getting bigger and bigger. And I was like, "Matt," I said, "honestly, I swear I would remember that." I said, "I swear I would remember that." And then as I said it, I thought, "Oh yeah, I remember that." But it was really funny. He did it so well. It was really funny. Yeah, so anyway.
That's hilarious. Do you think the rejections in an audition make you stronger for the next audition? It really pushes you to go harder at the next one that you get?
It can go either way, I think. Like, I think it depends on so many elements. It can, I think, totally crush your confidence for a while and you just feel, you know, really terrible and you can't do it, or you might feel more determined, especially if you feel like if you feel like you've done a good audition. For me anyway, if I feel I've auditioned as well as I could have and I didn't get the role, I'm okay with it. I think, well, you know, I did the best I could, it wasn't what they wanted. I never even think in terms of I wasn't good enough. I just think it wasn't what they wanted. They wanted somebody older, younger, different, whatever, you know. There's so many things that are involved in the casting process, and I think you have to be very careful if you want to stay sane as an actor to not take these things too personally, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it can go either way, depending on what, how fragile your mental state is at the time. Mm.
Yeah. You won, played Sally Kennedy in The Restless Years in 1980. Tell us about that.
Well, that is one that I don't have very strong memories of working on that one, to be quite honest. I was very distracted by a lot of other things at that particular point in my life. I remember, I think I got murdered by a psychiatrist or something, didn't I? Did I? Is that the one? I think I ended up a murder victim in that one. The Restless Years, and it was a Channel 10 production, was it? Or
yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Channel 10.
Yeah, I think it was Channel 10 in Sydney. I know it was shot in Sydney. But to be perfectly honest, I don't remember a lot about working in that. I think Ned Lander was in it. I remember doing a lot of work with him, and he was a lovely boy down Wollongong way. But I, to be perfectly honest, I don't have strong memories of working on that particular show.
No, that's
Yeah.
Now, you did play in Sons and Daughters. You played the role of a troublemaker, Tracy Kingsford, yeah, in 1985.
With Lisa, of course, Crittenden, yeah.
What was that like, being on Sons and Daughters, working with some amazing cast?
Yeah, that was fun. Like, Sons and Daughters was fun. And I played this tough-looking, leathery, wearing leather girl. And I had a very close friend of mine who played my offside, a guy called Robin Cock, who was also in Sweet and Sour, a lovely ABC series. And he died very young. He had a brain aneurysm. It was very, very sad. He was only in his 30s. And he was a dear, 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 dear friend of mine. I did a wonderful stage production with him, and he was a good, good friend. So it was really great having a real proper friend to work with in that. And Lisa was great on that, of course. And I was really mean to Lisa on that. I remember I was very, very cruel to Lisa on that, because I think we started in Prisoner around the same time as well, Lisa and I. It was we came into the show very similar time. And she's a good girl, Lisa. I like Lisa a lot. And lovely actress. Yeah, Sons and Daughters was fun. Sons and Daughters was fun. And it was fun to play a mean girl, because I'm usually more typecast as a lovely, nice, gorgeous person, you know. So it's always good when you get to do something that stretches you a little bit. It was fun.
You also played the main character Rebecca Sharp in the Firefly movie, and then the TV series that followed in 2004. Can you tell us about that show and about your character?
Yeah, well, that was, I loved working on that. No, I was really disappointed that we didn't get to do a second season of that, because they were very young script writers. And I felt like, I felt like if they'd been given a chance, like they made some mistakes in the writing and the storyline plotting, I think, like they didn't do as well as they could have. And I was sorry that they didn't get a second season to improve on that and to learn from their mistakes, because there were some very young writers on that. But, you know, it's funny, you know, All Saints took about 2 years before it really got a big, strong following.
Yeah.
But nowadays it has to be so quick. You have to get an audience so quickly before things are taken off the air. One of the most exciting things for me working on playing that character in that role was having the wonderful, wonderful actor Russell Kiefel play my husband. And he also died quite suddenly and
oh, wow,
too young, only a few years ago. And his wife is also a good friend of mine. We did Mum's the Word, a stage play together for many years, for over a year, I think. It was a long, long stage run. And he was such a wonderful actor. I was just delighted to get to work with him and to work with him so closely. And also to work with Drew Forsyth, is a wonderful actor, and his son, Abe Forsyth, played my son. And he was lovely to work with as well. Of course, John, you know who I mean. How could I forget his name? You know who I'm talking about. Hang on. What, John Waters.
Oh, John Waters.
John Waters. I can't forget his name. That's terrible. I adore John Waters. And he is delightful. John Waters is a truly delightful man. And actually, it was funny, you know, when I auditioned for that, I played Rebecca Sharp, as you said, and the character of my husband, his name was Sharpie. And when I auditioned for it, which was a great audition, that was a great audition process, and I was really delighted to get that role. And I did have to really audition for that, so that felt like a nice role to get. But when I read the script and I saw that my husband's character's name was Sharpie, and they'd only cast two people at that stage, and I didn't know who they were playing, and it was Libby Tanner and John Waters. And when I saw that my husband's name was going to be Sharpie, I thought, it's going to be John Waters, because he's got that scar, you know, he's got this great scar on his face. And I thought, oh, for sure he'll be playing Sharpie. Like, that'll be so cool to have, you know, gorgeous John Waters playing my husband. And then it ended up being Russell Kiefel, who is just awesome, but not like John Waters at all. Like, he was a really quirky looking guy and a great comedy guy. And it was kind of like from the sublime to the ridiculous in a way, but I loved it. I just loved working with Russell. That was a great show to work on. Great, great crew, great cast. We had fun working on that.
Wow. Can I ask you, just by 2004, you're a pretty well-known and established actor and been on many TV shows. And you just mentioned, you know, the writing of that show probably could have been a bit different. Are you someone that could give advice? Like, would you go up to them and say, you know, I suggest this, or you just sort of get the script and...
No, I've never had confidence of that. Like, it's funny because I am a good writer. Like, I love English. I love the English language. I love talking, obviously. And I have a nice turn of phrase when I write. Like, I think I'm a really good writer. But I feel like I'm more of an essayist than a drama writer. I've never written a play or had the desire to write drama. I do not feel confident about it. Big reader, you know, big movie watcher. But no, it's funny. My husband's a songwriter, and his style of songwriting is often very storytelling. He has a very storytelling sort of mode, and he tells stories not about his own life, but he imagines characters, and I would say he has more of that sort of creative sort of expression than I do. I would never go up to a writer and say, oh, you really should do this and you should do that. No, I think there are people who are much better than that.
Yeah. No, I mean, because you've been on so many shows by that, you know, by that stage, you probably haven't.
I know, you'd think I would have learned something by now, wouldn't you? Bloody hell. No.
Now, also, you've had a lot of guest roles and you've had a lot of regular roles on TV shows. Do you prefer the guest roles over a regular role, or do you prefer a regular role over a guest role?
Well, it's a different experience, of course. Like, it's a different, very different experience being a guest as to being a regular cast member. It's lovely being a regular cast member. There is a nice, for one thing, of course, actors are so freelance in their income that if you're a regular, there's a certain level of comfort that you have, you know. Yeah. whereas when you're doing a guest role, you're hoping that you'll be interesting enough to get another part, that somebody will see it and give you some more interesting role. Having said that, some of the guest roles I've done have been really interesting guest roles, and some of the regular characters I've played have been a bit more ordinary, you know. It's just different. But I think being a regular cast member is always lovely, in that you can get a real family sense on a film set with both the crew and the cast, you know. And when you are really part of that, like every day, week by week, It's a lovely thing. Also, though, the regular actors in shows, especially long-running shows like Prisoner or Home and Away, or the shows, even more so shows like Country Practice or GP, where they're very self-contained little stories rather than soap operas where there are these continuing storylines, the regular cast love the guest actors. They love having a guest actor. And so as a guest actor, you often feel very appreciated and respected, and it's nice to have people say, oh, it's so lovely to have you on set and it's so lovely to work with you. And, you know, the regular cast members really enjoy guest actors. So there's, you know, good things about both. Different.
I always imagine a guest actor being like the new kid at school, you know, the first day at school, it's sort of all, it's all new, nervous.
Yeah, well, it is. Well, I suppose it is like that, if, especially if it's a guest actor who hasn't, you know, is somebody new.
Yeah.
I mean, for somebody like me who, like, by 25 years old, I'd been a guest
done a
actor
lot.
On lots of things, and lots of people knew me already. So it was more like, oh, hey, I know you and I know half the crew. I always, of course, knew more crew than any other actor because my sister and my brother, both being film crew, I mean, for me,
no.
Like at the height of my career, I'd go onto a film set. And even if I didn't know anybody on this film set, half of them would know my mother or my sister or my brother, you know, so everyone's like, oh, I love Frank, love Janet, love Joy, you know, like, so I sort of always felt very welcome on every film set. And I always knew more film crew than anybody else on the set. Yeah.
You're also a voiceover artist and a very familiar voice at Australian checkouts.
Yes.
How did you get into doing that and what aspects of it do you enjoy?
Well, okay, that's a good question. That is something that I also started very, very young, because as a young actress, when they wanted a kid's voiceover, they'd go for a young actor, you know, somebody who had some drama experience. So I actually did my first voiceover at about 11 or 12. And some of the people I worked with on that day, I'm still working with today. So I did the occasional voiceover when I was starting at about 11, every 6 months or, you know, maybe two or three times a year, there'd be some job for a kid. And then by the time I was in my teens, I was getting a little bit more work, you know, and then all the way through my 20s, when I was a very busy actress, I was also doing voiceover work. And I'd sort of average maybe two or three voiceovers a week. For many years, I averaged two or three voiceovers a week.
Wow.
And then I wasn't like a busy voiceover artist, but I was but I had many, many years of regularly doing voiceovers. So I was an experienced voiceover artist. And then I remember in my early 30s, about shortly after my daughter was born, I think, I did a voiceover at one tiny little studio, but they had never seen me before. They'd never used me before. And I did a voiceover and this engineer was like, wow, who are you? Like, you're fantastic. You're great. And I said, oh yeah, well, you know, I'm Anna. I do voiceovers. And anyway, he just decided that I was fabulous and that he discovered me. And over the next really 3 or 4 weeks only, he used me for about 3 or 4 different jobs in his tiny little studio, but they were all for different clients and from big agencies, you know, J. Walter Thompson's and Leo Burnett's and all these different producers. And within 6 weeks of doing that first job with him, I went from doing 2 or 3 voiceovers a week to all of a sudden I was getting, you know, 8, 10, 12 and just like that. Like, it was really all of a sudden. And I remember waking up one morning and looking at my diary and thinking, wow, all these voiceovers. And I remember thinking, gee, I used to be an actress who did the occasional voiceover, but I think maybe now I'm a voiceover artist who does a little bit of acting. So it was kind of very organic for me. I just kind of became a voiceover artist accidentally. Yeah, so, wow. And the other question you asked about the difference and what I like about it, you know, one thing about, you know, I was talking about actors and people's opinions of performances. You're only ever as good as an actor. As an actor, you're only ever as good as somebody thinks you are when they're watching you. And they can think, oh, I love her, or they can think, eh. Yeah. Or, and it's just, and they're perfectly entitled to that opinion. Neither are right or wrong. But as a voiceover artist, there are actual skills involved, and I'm really good at them. You know, And so when I do a job, when I do a voiceover, I know I'm good at it. I know how to do it. And I know I always leave my clients really satisfied, and I can be sure of that. And that's a nice thing to have as an actor, to think, you know, like, because as an actor, I'm as good as somebody thinks I am. But as a voiceover artist, I know I'm good. I'm really, really good. That's why I get a lot of work, you know, and there are skills involved that I just learnt, picked up over the years and have honed over the years. And there's a certain level of respect that I get as a voiceover artist that in Australia, you really don't get much respect here. We're a cultural wasteland here in Australia, generally speaking. I don't know if it's in the budget, but the cuts to the arts in the recent budget is just, just appalling. Like, we have no respect. We have no respect for the arts in this country at all. And that is one of my little soapbox rants that I can get onto. But I just think I think we treat the arts disgustingly in this country.
It's amazing they do that, because the government always calls on the arts when there's the problem, you know, bushfires, they want to raise money, floods, all sorts of things. They always call on arts. And
there was no support for the arts during the COVID, you know, pandemic at all. And it's terrible. So there are things. In fact, my agent now is RMK, which is a voiceover agency. And when I needed to change agents last time, and this was many years ago now, I've been with RMK for many years, and I didn't want to go straight to a voiceover agency. I wanted to, you know, many years ago, I wanted to have an agent who could look after me for my acting work, but who also understood my value as a voiceover artist, because I've certainly made a lot more money in my career through voiceover than I ever have through my acting.
Oh, wow.
And so it's literally, you know, a valuable thing. And so I wanted to find an agent who could represent me for both. And I won't mention any agency names, because I won't do that. But there was one particular agent that I thought, well, these people would be really good. They're a really great actors agency, but they also have some really good voiceover artists. So they will understand that it may sound arrogant, but they will understand that it is to their advantage to have me on their books, because they don't even have to do anything at all. And if they just sign me up, I can make them in commission a lot of money, more than most actors, just with my commission. And they don't even have to raise a finger. So of course they'll value me. So I wrote to them and said, oh, look, I'm looking for a new agent. You know, you probably know me. Here's my CV. I'm also, you know, a really busy voiceover artist, blah, 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 blah. And I got the most standard rote email rejection back.
Oh, wow.
And I just thought, wow. I was insulted. I thought, and I was also, it really dropped my opinion of that particular agent. And I thought, you know what? I want an agent who's going to actually value me for who I am. And so RMK were the best agency in town, in Australia, the biggest voiceover agency in Australia. And so I emailed them and I said, would you be interested in representing me? And they were just so delighted to have me, and we couldn't believe that I wanted to be with them, you know, and have treated me so well ever since.
Oh, I'm so good.
So that's the kind of different, that's probably a pretty thorough answer to that question about acting, voiceover. You know, I get different things from both of those careers. I love acting. It's really fun. It's a wonderful creative process, and I adore it. But I'm lack ambition. I lack ambition like no other actor in this country. I care so little these days. I really do. I you know, like you're talking about auditioning before. I rarely will audition for anything these days. I just think, if somebody wants to cast me, that's great. I'd love to do it. But my life is very full. I don't need it. So, and I have a bit more self-respect these days, I think. That's just me.
Your career speaks for itself. So, I mean, you know. I
read it and I think, wow.
Yeah.
Impressive, doesn't it? Yeah. I'm chuckling because of a Facebook exchange I had with some stranger recently. I'm a bit mouthy on Facebook, so, and I got into some little thing with a with a Facebook person, and they obviously went and looked at my page or something and came back and said, oh, so you're a failed actor.
Oh, what?
A failed actor. And I thought, I actually burst out laughing when I read it. I thought, wow, that's hilarious. Because I look at my CV and I think, wow, was I actually good enough to get all that work? I'm impressed. Yeah. It's funny.
You good old keyboard warriors. They're great.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to throw a fan question at you just while we are talking about voiceovers. Joseph said, apart from being a great actor, I heard that she was also the famous Telstra lady, the voice of Telstra services like Message Bank 101 and disconnected services for many years. Would love to see her repeat some of those Telstra announcements in person.
Okay. Well, I've just had an email come through for something I've got to record in a little while. So you can have a preview of a new, let's see what it's for here. Hang on. Okay, here we go. This is what I'll be recording when I finish this interview. Welcome to the Telstra Integrated Service Desk for DFAT. Did you know that if you are registered to Telstra Connect, you can report and track faults online? To take advantage of this feature, please sign on to connectapp.telstra.com, or alternatively, please hold the line and we will answer your call as soon as possible. Please remember that calls may be recorded for coaching and quality purposes.
Well, I'm sure during the pandemic, everyone has heard you because everyone is on hold on the phone for
absolutely
all sorts of services.
I do self-service checkout in Australia as well, and all this Telstra stuff and other phone work. So if I meet a stranger at a party and they say, "Oh, so what do you do? Like, what job do you do?" I usually say, "Well, I do a job where I can pretty much guarantee you that someone somewhere is swearing at me 24 hours a day. Someone is swearing at me either down a phone line or at a self-service checkout." I was voted once the most unpopular woman in Sydney on the ABC radio on Richard Glover's show. He said, "Who is it in Australia, in Sydney, that we really hate the most?" And it was the Telstra lady. And I rang up. And guess what? My mother, when Virginia Trioli from Melbourne was up here for a while on ABC Radio, and she was a Melbourne person, and she was trying to find out what Sydney was all about. And so she ran a little competition saying, who do you consider the most admired Sydney sider who's not really famous? Who are the people who we don't really know about? Who's the most admired Sydney cider? So I was voted the most hated person in Sydney, and my mother was voted the most admired Sydney cider. So family of extremes we are.
No, thank you for doing that. That was, we've all heard that message in our lives. That's great. Now, you also, to add to your work, you're also a sign language interpreter. Now, how did that come about? That's a very interesting...
Well, that came about when I did a workshop, it was a professional actors workshop. A woman came over here from America, and all these actors, or a lot of my colleagues, we did this workshop for actors. And we had to bring a monologue, and we were working on this same monologue, our own monologue, each, over and over again over the weekend. And one of the actors was an American deaf actress, Caroline Aquilee. That was her sign name. And she was this short, dumpy little woman, very, very plain little woman. And she had a sign language interpreter with her. And so, of course, she did her monologue in sign language, and the interpreter was voicing it for her. So it was the first time I'd really got to see sign language, and especially repeated over and over and over again with the English, so that I could pick up a few signs. And she was so gorgeous. Like, she just turned into this other thing when she was doing this monologue in sign. And it was such a beautiful, expressive language. And I just fell in love with the language on that weekend. I was just pregnant at the time. And so I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to learn that one day. That is so beautiful. And then I just forgot about it. And when my daughter was born, I wasn't doing a lot. I didn't have a lot of work for a while, like the first year or so she was born. I wasn't doing a lot of work. I wasn't a busy voiceover artist yet. And I just thought, oh, what'll I do? And I thought, oh, you know what? Why don't I learn sign language? That'd be fun. So I went to TAFE and started studying sign language just for fun. And then I just got quite involved with the deaf community and they all encouraged me. There was a real lack of interpreters, sign language interpreters in the country at that time. And so they really encouraged me to continue my studying and become an accredited sign language interpreter. I'm only accredited at the paraprofessional level, which is a profession. They call it, it used to be level 2 and level 3, level 1, level 2, level 3. So I'm a level 2 interpreter or a paraprofessional interpreter. It's sort of like level 1, level 2, level 3. So I'm not quite a level 3 interpreter, but I've been interpreting for many years, working for the Deaf Society and the National Auslan Booking Centre, which is the medical booking service. And it's great. Yeah, it's an interest. I mean, it's a beautiful language. You know, I love it. Yeah. So, very. And also that's another thing as opposed to acting, where I had to really study. I had to pass exams, and then I got accredited. It was like, I can do this. I can say yes. I can do this. I have qualified. You know, it's also nebulous when you're an actor.
Is there anything you can't do? I mean, you make cheese, scones, you grow vegetables, you've acted in a TV show,
voiceovers. I cannot clean the house.
We can make
let's talk about stage roles. Can you tell us in your out of your stage roles, do you have a favorite?
Well, I really, probably my favourite experience doing a play was when I did Mum's the Word, which was really more like a storytelling play, but I worked with a lovely bunch of actresses, and the best thing about it was that it was directed by Karen Fairfax. You know who Karen Fairfax is? She was in Prisoner. She had a little role in Prisoner, and this is where I met her. Okay. I met Karen. She played Andy's sister.
Oh yes,
do you remember? And yeah. Andy's sister. So I was in Melbourne and I didn't know many people in Melbourne at all, and she came in to play this little role. She only had a few scenes and we just hit it off straight away. Like she was, we just were immediately really, really good friends. And she was a really great theatre actress, and I saw her in some wonderful theatre in Melbourne while I was there, and you know, with the MTC, and I was so jealous because I was always a television actress. You know, I did all this, I had this, as you've read out, this long history of television work, and she was this like theatre actress, like working with all these proper theatre actors, and I just thought she was incredible and had this marvelous career. And I think she was a little bit jealous of me with all my television work because I had, you know, all the television work. So we really loved each other, and we were so delighted a few years later to get cast as sisters in Harp in the South and Poor Man's Orange. Oh, so wow. and as I mentioned before, they were beautiful shows to work on. And Karen was really, really close with Annie Phelan. She gave a eulogy at her funeral and everything. They were very, very close. We were very lucky. That's one of my dogs. It's just a car going down the driveway. How dare it? Yes, Ellie, shush now. But anyway, so we had this beautiful experience, Karen and I, working on Harp in the South and Poor Man's Orange together. And then we didn't see each other for many years. And then she became a director and was doing all this wonderful directing. And she started a theatre company, a children's theatre company in Melbourne, and did all sorts of wonderful things. She ended up marrying Paul Kelly, the singer, and has two daughters.
Oh, Paul Kelly? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So she has her two daughters with him. But I hadn't seen her for many years. And then she, out of the blue, I got this audition for Mum's the Word. And it was Karen. Karen doing, no, I didn't audition. She just cast me in it. That's right. She didn't make me audition, which was lovely. And so that was a lovely reconnection. And she was wonderful to work with as a director. And so that was in about 1999, just before I started work on Home and Away, actually. I finished that production just before starting work on Home and Away. And then again, I hadn't seen her for many years, ran into her at Annie Phelan's funeral a couple of years ago. And only recently, during the COVID pandemic, she got stuck in New South Wales. She's from Victoria and she got stuck in New South Wales. She bought a little van and was on the road. And all of a sudden Victoria was locked down and she couldn't get home. And she just rang me up out of the blue just to have a chat. And she said, oh, I'll have to come and see you next time I'm in Sydney. And I said, oh, I'm not in Sydney. I'm in the Northern Rivers. And she said, really? I'm in the Northern Rivers. Oh, and wow. So she ended up coming here and staying with us for ages. And it was so fantastic to spend time with her. And in fact, she's coming back in a couple of weeks and I can't wait to see her. It's been wonderful. So yeah, that was probably my favorite theatre production. I hesitated because there was another show I did that was written, a play written by a man called Wayne Tunks, called The Girl from the West of the City. And that was a really interesting play. And I was very good in that play. It was a lovely character. I worked with a lovely actor friend of mine, Peter Flett. And I think I just gave a particularly good performance in that play. It was a very small production. Not many people saw it, but it was very satisfying because I knew I did a really special performance in that. So that was nice.
Oh, amazing. Now, out of the TV shows, movies, theatre work, voiceover work, what's your favourite thing to do?
Do you know, it's hard. I don't think I have a favourite, you know. I like doing anything I do. I like to do it.
You enjoy it.
The best I can and do it well, you know, whether it's bake a loaf of bread or a voiceover or an interpreting gig or a television show. And I like variety. I think I have, like as we've mentioned several times, I started acting very young. So all my life I've done, you know, this for that amount of time, then had a break and then done something else and then done this and then done that. Once when I wasn't getting much acting work, I had to work 3 weeks straight in one office and it nearly killed me. I just thought, God, how do people do this? You know, I think I have a very short attention span. So I think I like doing different things. I like all of them. I don't think I have a favorite. I just like doing things well.
A whole lot, yeah, wow. Mm.
You also appeared in series 12 and 13 of Home and Away between episodes 2729 and 2957. How did you get the part of Judith Aykroyd and had you auditioned for any other roles in the show prior to that?
Now, this is another one that I can't remember. I think they offered me that role, Judith Aykroyd, and I think then they said, oh, actually, can we audition her as well? And so I think I did have to go in and do an audition as well. But, yeah, Home and Away, honestly, that show to work on, they look after you so well. That is a lovely, or when I, certainly when I was in it, I just felt like, wow, this production, perhaps because it's been going for so long and probably the core cast have a lot to do with it. I'd say the core cast over the years, you know, made sure that all the actors, especially the young actors, were treated very well. Because it is a little bit, it can be a little bit harsh, the soap opera for the young actors. They do tend to, you know, chew them up and spit them out a bit. Yeah. And I did feel a little bit, like it was hard for some of those young people who, because while I said they look after you very well, they look after you so well and you are treated so very, very much like a star and really, really looked after in every single way, that when it's all over, it's a little bit of a shock, I think, for some of those young actors. So there's good things and bad things about that. I mean, it's hard, you know, it's hard for actors, I think, because, you know, creative people generally can be a bit fragile. You know, it's just the nature of creativity. And yet the business is so harsh. Yeah. And so it's you know, I think I am one of the lucky ones in being a fairly resilient kind of personality and not feeling too dependent. If I had to feel dependent on just the acting I've done in my life and my acting career to feel good about myself, I think that would be very hard. I've had a lot of other things that have helped me feel okay about myself, and also the advantage of starting very young, and as I mentioned before, getting used to rejection and understanding that that's not something that I should let hurt me.
Yeah.
You know, to have some sort of level of toughness about that. But I felt sorry for some of the young actors on Home and Away, but it was a fun show to work on. I tell you, they really look after you, and there's some gorgeous people on that. Ada Nicodemo started on that shortly after I was in it. She's so fun. Lynn McGrange is adorable. You know, like Judy Nunn was terrifying, but it was fun to her as well. And because I loved her writing, I read her books. You know, I thought she's a great author, and. Yeah. So fortunately, I could say that to her. I could look her in the eye and say, "Hey, Judy, love your writing," and, you know, quote a bit of the book, and that helped get me in there. And she was friends with my mother as well, of course. But lots of the young people were gorgeous on that. And of course, Stephen James King, who played my son. And I know you've probably got a question about him, I think.
Yeah, that's okay. We can talk about it now.
Yeah, he had just had his 16th birthday. When I first met him in the makeup van, I walked into the makeup van and there he was getting all his crazy goth hairstyles and makeup done, and we bonded like mother and son. We really did. He is still a very, very close friend of mine, has been since the day I met him in that makeup van. Everybody loved him on set. He was only 16, but he was such a student of drama. He was so keen, and he had immense respect for all the older actors. He loved all the older actors, and so they all loved him, you know, like they were, everybody loved Stevie. A very smart man, and a wonderful, has become now, because he'd be 36 now, I think. So I've known him for all those years since his 16th birthday, and he directed and conceived both. I sent you film clips of my husband's music videos. He directed.
I directed them. Wow.
He directed them, conceived them. They were his ideas, his writing, the latest one. He filmed it all as well, and he's become he's like a student of comedy. He's the most wonderful comedy writer, and he's been like a Tropfest finalist with his movie, his short film Little Bondi, which is kind of like Little Britain, but he's done an Australian version just as this little small, short film. But he's wonderful. He's seriously talented fellow. Got a full scholarship to Juilliard in New York and went and studied it.
Oh, wow.
At Juilliard. Yeah, yeah. So he's a very talented boy and a much loved member of my family is how I think of him. So
amazing. Yeah. Had you watched Home and Away prior to going on?
To be honest, I hadn't watched a lot of it. I had seen, you know, I was aware of it, and I did watch a little bit before I started filming. But I've in the past, I don't think so much nowadays. It's changed a little over the years in tone. But when I was doing it then, I must admit I did think of it as like children's television. But it's changed over the years, of course, a little more dramatic. Even when I was on it, I think it did that. Kimberly Cooper was fun too. She was a really good girl. I liked her a lot. We had fun.
Yeah. Summer Bay is a pretty exciting place, isn't it? A lot of things.
Droughts, locust place, and you name it, they got it. Yeah, it's fantastic. Actually, I'll tell you one little inside bit that I always loved. You know, we all watched the absolute determination of the sportsman in Leighton Hewitt really courting young Beck.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness. He was. It was like the talk of the thing. Like, it, you'd be in the green room and the phone would ring. Say, oh, is Beck there? Like, it's Leighton again.
He really
wanted her, yeah. So that was funny. It was great to watch that all happen. That was hilarious. Yeah, wow. She was great too. She was a lovely girl. She was a good girl.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Did you actually get a character breakdown for the part?
For Judith? Yes, I think I did. Sorry, something's happening. That's right. Judith, I can't remember the character breakdown. She was kind of pretty ordinary. It was more her son, her relationship with her son more than anything, I think. And I always remember when, of course, my husband, the character of my husband was dead by then. But there was a scene where there's a video of where he's talking to his son who has Huntington's disease, because he had Huntington's disease as well. And that character of my dead husband was played by Peter Sumner, who's a beautiful, you know, really beautiful actor. And I remember I told you before that Russell Kiefel played my husband in Fireflies. And, you know, they died within a week of each other, Russell Kiefel and Peter Sumner. And I remember thinking at the time, wow, two of my screen husbands have died. I guess I must be getting old. but I remember being quite moved by that, to very, very fine Australian actors. Mm.
Wow.
Yeah, but I think she was just a little, you know, she was pretty smart, canny kind of woman, single woman, got to have a fling with gorgeous Dave. What's his name? What was his name again, who I had the fling with?
Oh,
what's his name? Dave Woodley is the actor, David Woodley. Yeah. He was gorgeous. He was a lovely guy. And then of course the fantasy romance with old Mr. Fisher.
Well, that's what my next question was. Norman Coburn.
Yeah.
One of my favorite characters, Flathead. Now, what was it like working so closely with him? Which is also a fan question from Adam as well. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he was great. We got on very well, Norman and I. And in fact, I was only thinking about him recently because he used to talk about how he'd love to go down to Tasmania and live in Tasmania and have a vineyard. And I was Googling him the other day for some reason, maybe thinking about this. Excuse me. and I realized he is living in Tasmania.
And
I very much hope he has a vineyard. Yeah. So I thought, I really hope that's where he is and that's what he's doing, because I haven't seen him since he's moved down there, if he has. But he was a lovely man, very smart man. And I mean, I know he had a bit of a grumpy reputation, but I always got on very well with him. I'm just going to get myself a glass of water. Oh,
yeah, that's okay. No problem. I will just
now let's talk about Prisoner. You appeared in 35 episodes of series 4 and 5 in the 1982-1983 between episodes 304 and 339. How did you get the part of Patty Lawson, and had you auditioned for any other roles before that? Do you remember the audition, if you did?
Well, I definitely hadn't auditioned for any other roles before that. And I was just talking to my husband about it this morning, because I'd said to him, I don't remember auditioning for Prisoner. I don't know if I auditioned for it or not. And he said to me, wasn't somebody else cast in the role and then they couldn't do it for some reason? And so they offered the role to you. And I said, I think you might be right, because I remember when I was given the character breakdown, my eyes were almost popping out of my head, because back then I was extremely thin. I was a very thin little person. And she was described as this huge, scary. I mean, I think one of the characters talking about me in my first opening episode says, she's got more muscles than the freak. And I remember reading it and thinking, I don't know how to act that. Like, I'm this skinny little thing. These clothes are hanging off me. So I think my husband's probably got that right, that the role was not, I shouldn't have been cast in that role, or I wasn't cast in that role initially. So I remember with the early episodes feeling very self-conscious about the fact that I really wasn't, like, how could I be as scary as Maggie Kirkpatrick? I mean, how could I? You know, like that was very, very challenging. I was very nervous. I remember being very nervous my first couple of weeks there. I remember that very well. Yeah.
Just being nervous. What was the first day like? Like, first day on set, walking into Wentworth.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I remember my first day walking into the green room. My first filming, the way they always film soap operas is they film the OB scenes, which is outside broadcast. They do, you'll remember this, like they do the outdoor scenes 1 week and the next week you do the studio for what you've done the outdoor scenes for the year before. So I was there to do some OB work, but it was at the studio because we were just filming in the car park. It was just it was in a van. It was in the van. It was me arriving in the van, you know, along with Margot, Jane Clifton. And anyway, I had to go into the green room and wait. I had got my makeup done, got my wardrobe done, wandered into the green room. There weren't many people there because they were all in the studio filming. And so I just looked around the room and I sat down in the corner. It felt like I was sitting in an out-of-the-way corner. That's what I thought I was sitting. That's where I thought I was sitting. And so I sat there very quietly, you know, looking at my script, learning my lines, making sure I knew them. And then the scene finished and all the actors came pouring out. So this was my first meeting with the actors. And I always remember this was my first contact with Sheila Lawrence, because Sheila and Judith McGrath and Elspeth all walked up to exactly where I was sitting, and Sheila just stood there with her arms looking down at me. And I was looking up and thinking, oh, what have I done? And she says, you're in my chair. And I was like, oh, sorry, you know. And I think she may have thought at that point that I was an extra and that I should have known better, because all the extras were quite regular. That were like the extras were great on that show. And so I obviously got up quick, smart, and backed away. And the three of them sat down and lit fags. I mean, you could, you know, everybody smoked everywhere those days. But I wandered away. And I think at some point, they became aware that I was actually, you know, not just an extra disrespecting the cast. But honestly, it was like entering a bloody women's prison. I have to say, like, that my first few weeks, because I was only 21 as well, and so there were all these, you know, much admired and respected older actors, because even 35, you know, even 30 was old to me at 21, or certainly way more experienced than me, you know. And oh man, I tell you, it was scary. Like I found a lot of those women scary, although not the ones that you'd think, you know. Like for instance, Maggie took me under her wing. Like she was wonderful. Like I love Maggie, and she lives up near me now too, you know. She's in Brunswick Heads here, so and she's been on my list of people I have to call. But she's wonderful. I love Maggie. And the other person that I just absolutely adored was Carol Skinner.
Oh, Carol.
Carol.
Yeah. We do want to talk about you and Carol.
And Amanda Muggleton and Jane Clifton. I loved Amanda. I've seen Amanda recently a few times, actually. I saw her in a wonderful production in Melbourne only last year, and it was great catching up with her. She's so good. She's such a fine, fine actress, and so fun. She's so fun. I love her.
How far was the green room from the studios, Ken? Like, was it close?
Oh, really close. Oh,
just close. Yeah, across the outside, virtually outside. You walk 10 paces. I actually fell asleep one time in the green room and nobody moved me.
Yeah. But it wasn't, do you think, Ken, it was sometimes like being in a women's prison, wasn't it? It
was for me. Very like much. Very much.
But one of my main memories about studio, filming in the studio in particular, is, so much laughing on set. And honestly, people would get sent out of the studio. Like, the director would get so pissed off because people couldn't stop laughing. And they'd just get out of here. Come back in 5 minutes when you've got it out of your system. Like, oh, it's so funny. But they laughed so much. They Elspeth and Sheila. I mean, honestly, it was funny. Amanda and Jane and I were quite close friends for a while. And Judith and Elspeth and Sheila, they used to, you know, have that little corner that they sat in, like I told you. And we used to call them the coven. It's the coven over there. I shouldn't have said that. Somebody will watch that. but they were lovely. And of course, I saw quite a lot of Judith when I was doing Home and Away, because she was working on All Saints, which was filmed in the studio next to us. And Judith was great. We had many a great conversation smoking a cigarette outside the studio together. So, yeah, she was
great. She had a very dry sense of humour.
Very dry, which I actually realised it took me, honestly, she scared the crap out of me when the early days of Prisoner, but it took me some time to realise, she was just very funny. And Sheila was amazing, wasn't she? I mean, she was just amazing to look at as much as anything else, Sheila. Apart from that glorious character of Lizzie that she created, like, that's such an beautiful, iconic Australian television character.
Yeah, one that you'll never forget. Had you seen the show prior to coming on it? Were you a fan of the show?
I had seen a bit of Prisoner, yeah. Like, Prisoner was pretty watchable television back then, you know. And also, of course, because so many wonderful actresses on it, you know, it was really good to see so many actresses being able to play these fabulous roles. And I had some good friends who were in it that, of course, I wanted to see as well. People like Tracy Mann was a good friend at the time, and she played a great character. And I remember loving watching her. Georgie, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And she was great. She was terrific. I know somebody asked if I do smoke cigarettes, and yes, I do. I'm going to smoke.
How do you really smokes? There we go.
There you go. There's your answer. Voiceover answer. Terrible, isn't it?
Now, we've just already covered the next question, so back to you again, Matt.
Well, we've covered mine, so I feel like we're playing Uno here. over to Ken.
We talked
about Patty was a very aggressive inmate when she first came in, and my question was, did you find it difficult to portray that? And physically, you said you did, but I mean, mentally, did you find it tough?
Well, it was a stretch for me at that point in my career. You know, like I'd played generally quite nice, sweet, gentle people, you know. That was kind of what I was cast as most of the time. I did find it challenging playing that role. And I'd probably approach the whole thing very differently now. I don't know. I mean, I think I got obviously much more comfortable with the cast, and I think I felt a certain sense of relief when the storyline got to the part where she was diagnosed as claustrophobic, and so it allowed me to sort of pull back on the very aggressive side of the character.
Yeah, there was a change there.
That they wanted, you know. I mean, I remember doing that I think it was my first day, and certainly one of the very early scenes, because it was the scene where I first arrive in the back of the van, and Jane's character Margot was in the back of the van with me. And there's a point where she's makes some gag about me or something, and I had to grab her by the collar and really fast. And we were talking about the laughing. I mean, I certainly fit into the cast in that regard, because she was just making me laugh. Like every time I had it this close to my face, and she just had this comic, like this ridiculous look on her face, and I just couldn't stop laughing. And it was terrible. You know, when actors laugh and break up like that and can't stop laughing, it looks like they're having a really good time. But honestly, there comes a point where you just want to stop laughing, because you are pissing people off. And this poor boom swinger, it was freezing cold, Melbourne in the middle of winter, and this poor boom swinger was lying on the floor of this metal van. It was freezing. And he's just lying there, just looking at me in my first day on set, and me just, it's my first day. Like, I'm not supposed to be laughing like that, you know? Like, this is for your Judith McGraths and your Sheila Florences. They can get away with it, you know? But it's my first day, and I'm just holding it up by not being able to stop laughing and looking like I'm having a really good time, as one does when one is laughing, and just feeling like, oh, please, God, stop now. You know, this poor guy, they're all going to hate you. And so that I remember that very, very vividly. But Jane and Amanda and I, we had fun on that show, yeah.
You had another funny scene with Jane. I think it was in the library, and they locked you in the library, Margot and Faye. And then you came out and you were trying to bash up Margot. I think from memory, it was in the library.
Oh, I had to rewatch a bit of this. I don't remember that. I don't remember that scene specifically, but I'll have to have a look at it. It's funny because I didn't see a lot of it. I didn't see a lot of my own work on Prisoner on air originally, because I worked on it for around 6 months or so, and then I almost immediately, or a few, only a couple of months after I finished work, and there was quite a delay in those days before the work you filmed made it to television. Shortly after my character started appearing on television, I went overseas and I travelled around for a year.
Okay.
And so I missed actually seeing it on the television in that week to week way. Yeah. And there's probably, to be honest, there are probably episodes that I've never seen. So I really should make the effort to watch it again. Because as I was telling you before, that I reconnected with Karen Fairfax only recently, and we sat down and watched Harp in the South and Poor Man's Orange together.
Oh, wow.
Because we hadn't seen it for over 20 years. And it was really fantastic to watch it. Like, it was... It's truly high quality, beautiful television. I highly recommend, not for my own sake, but just for the sake of the production, that people have a look at it if you've never seen it, because they are two beautiful pieces of television with lovely Charles Tingwell, Bud Tingwell in it. And of course, Annie Phelan. If you're an Annie Phelan fan and you've never seen Harp in the South and Poor Man's Orange, she is no Must words. Watch.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful performance. So that was good. So I really should do that with Prisoner sometime, because I've, you know, just watch all my episodes in a row, yeah, you know, to see how the story pans out, because I've never actually experienced that myself.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was there a hint to begin with on your first day in the van of the claustrophobia thing? Did the writers suggest that's
yes like I knew that's what the issue with the character was. They didn't spring that on me a few episodes later, so I was playing it. I mean, I think that's how I justified the fact that it was that I was so aggressive, because I thought, you know, it's not so much that she's an angry, you know, bitter angry person, it's a medical condition that's making her act like this. So I think I kind of tr- tried to make that work for my character, so that rather than being just some nasty, tough, fighting person, that it was a medical condition, that I actually played her quite nervous as I recall. I tried to do that and trying to look tough, but actually being quite scared.
Well, now you mentioned before that Maggie Kirkpatrick sort of took you under her wing, and you worked with some amazing cast members, you know, Judith McGrath, Sheila Florence, Val Lehman. Yeah, there's so many. Did you have I know it's probably a hard one to answer, but did you have a favorite that you really look forward to doing scenes with? There was that sort of.
Well, a favorite I look forward to. I don't think so, because they were all great.
Yeah.
You know? Like I really did appreciate it. Even at the time, I appreciated the fact that I was, you know, given the opportunity to work with some of these wonderful older actors, and they were all great. Even the ones that I found tough to work with, in some ways, like, you know, like Val was tough to work with sometimes, because she remained in character